You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is 6 o'clock and time for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides here on Free Radio. 2 hours of babble and scrabble and scramble and bamble, and you can call in at 427-3772. Talk to me. I'm Bathrobe Spear Robert Mills. Talk to everyone out there listening. Our issues, civil rights for the poor, police misconduct, community issues at the lowest and the highest levels. Stay tuned.
Wednesday, I know that. So, what's your name?
Kathy.
And Kathy, you say there was something unusual going on in the parking lot when you hacky sack criminals were caught?
Well, actually, we were supposed to camp on the beach, and we were looking for them, but we couldn't find them because they didn't know we were coming with them, and they wanted to find a good spot. But we couldn't find them, so we came back to the car, and we were cleaning it out, like, because it was, we needed to make a place to sleep, and the cops came, and they said that we looked like, people on dope or something like that, and they checked our eyes and stuff or something. We just was trying to find a place to, like...
How many were you?
Just me and my boyfriend.
How many?
In the front.
Where was this?
In the parking lot of some grocery store. I can't remember the name of it.
What, downtown?
Over toward... What beach was that?
Toward the Davenport?
Yeah, over by East Cliff Drive.
You mean that way or that way?
That way.
Yes, East Cliff. Davenport is the other way.
Yeah.
And so, were these police officers from, like, blue-shirted type police officers? Santa Cruz police officers?
Yeah.
Do you know who they were?
Uh-uh.
They just told you to move on.
No, they let us sleep there because we didn't have any other choice because she had the key.
They said they were going to tow our car if we didn't move it at first, but then
yeah,
they were nice.
Yeah, the car because I kind of felt violated because he automatically judged us thinking we were dope addicts or something. And, like,
more than looking
at
us. Clear heroin user.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, lots of traffic.
LSD, cocaine, caffeine,
yeah.
Sugar.
Actually, I'm vegan, and I'm 100% natural. Rastafari, I tow foods and herbs, everything.
They actually let you sleep. I think that's a positive thing.
What are you doing? We were surprised. We were almost arrested. So
it was a moment of tension, but you... No hassles.
It was better.
And the cops told us we couldn't sit there.
Yeah.
At that point.
Any hassles with police you wish to report?
I felt violated.
Hemingway, Eichmann, stranger in a strange land, building Berlin Bay, a pig's invasion, Lawrence of Arabia, British Beatlemania.
It's about, Friday the 3, we're out back in back of the vet's hall. We just finished chowing down on some good food. I'm talking to James Ney until very recently. What was your position, James?
I was the manager of the armory for the homeless.
How long were you in that position?
Since November 15th.
And what did that position involve?
It involved having two monitors that worked under me and collecting up the homeless people over at 115 Coral Street at the Human Resource Center and hauling them by bus up to the armory for the night, passing out blankets, mattresses, and letting them sleep. I provide a TV and a VCR, try to give them movies, you know, maybe do popcorn, things like that. You know, and give them a place to sleep and a place to be for the night when it's cold.
And you're a man who lives in your vehicle yourself, right?
Yes, sir, I am.
And,
with my two boys.
With your two boys. Have you had any problems with police hassling you around that?
Somewhat. I haven't gotten a ticket, thank Lord, you know, but yes, I have been harassed and, you know, called a troll, and they told my son, you stink and got dirty feet, you know. Mm-hmm. That's good old Officer Kelly.
Officer Kelly, how long ago did all these incidents happen? Anything recent in the last couple of weeks? Or?
Not with the police officers, no.
That's good.
Yeah.
But you say that you seem to have encountered a different kind of problem up at the armory.
Oh, yeah, I did. Being the manager there, 2 weeks ago, my grandmother died. So it was on a Thursday. It was time for me to work, and I called in and took 3 days off from work because of the fact of my grandma dying, you know, and needing the time off. And they didn't like me taking the time off. And so then I came back to work last week and was there Wednesday afternoon to start work when I was called in the office and informed that I was being terminated for inappropriate behavior at the armory with the alarm service. First alarm, the security service.
Had you been acting inappropriately? What did that mean?
Absolutely not. I asked him to explain that to me, Jeremy Jitka, who was telling me this, and I've never had a complaint, never had a problem, never been reprimanded, nothing there. And he said that it was this complaint with this guard who has been at the armory all the time. And I said, well, excuse me, the armory guard has been a female. You know, one night we had a male officer. And so then he went on something about some sexual abuse or something. And I said, well, I don't know anything about that. I said, the only thing of that was handled by the monitor, Sean, not by me. And he said, well, that is why we're firing you. He says, per Karen Gilletti. And I said, well, please get Karen Gilletti and have this explained to me. Karen Gilletti came into the office and stated to me that she had, that night, Tuesday night, received a phone call at home from First Alarm stating that I had acted inappropriately with the guard and they were extremely upset last night. Her words, last night. I said,
you've been gone for 2 weeks.
Right. I said, excuse me, Karen. I says, I didn't work last night. And she said, well, I says, in fact, I haven't been here for 2 weeks. And she said, oh, well, this was 2 weeks ago. You did it. They just called me last night at home.
It took a while informing her it was a serious matter, didn't
it? Yeah. And I says, well, is this because of my complaints over money missing out of the budgets and, you know, money, $500 gone out of the budget for blankets and there's no blankets at the armory. You know, my questioning the fact of donations coming into the office, being hauled in the office first and employees getting first choice out of the donations and then whatever's left over being given to the homeless and my complaints over that. And she said, oh, of course not, that this has nothing to do with that. And then they said, well, you took people that didn't belong at the armory up last week, and Mike Bustico was going to fire you last week and didn't. And I said, well, I didn't work last week. Well, sometime.
Now it got a little vaguer there as you pursued it.
The more I pursued it, the vaguer it got. Then they claimed that I was under a probationary period, which no one who's ever worked at Human Resource or ISSP or HCRC has ever had a probationary period.
Are you appealing this firing? Or?
Well, yeah, I think I'm going to go to the labor board over it, yes. They have no appeal process there. Karen Gilletti is just the Lord and Master, and, you know, what she says goes.
Well, you mentioned that there's a practice of some sort of sifting process whereby donations get sifted through the hands of the employees before the remains reach the people they're intended for?
Absolutely. That is a fact, proven fact. You ask anybody who's been there, you come there and watch donations, they don't go down and go in the room, the donation room for the homeless. They go in the office first, and they're picked over. In fact, one lady claims to be donation manager, her name's Sugar. Mm-hmm. Her real name is Dolores. She claims that she takes it in there and it's picked through, and employees and their family or friends get first choice out of all donations, and then what's left over is put out for homeless people.
And you think that a lot disappears en route, or what's your feeling about that?
Absolutely. I don't know. I'm saying that I know that I've seen a lot of nice items such as boomboxes and Walkmans and stuff like that this Christmas being donated, and all I have seen the homeless people get are clothing, and that's used old clothing. All the nice jackets that I've seen these employees taking 3 and 4. I've seen employees give to other people bags of donations with tags on them to allow them to take them back to Outdoor World, return these items to get camping projects that they brought back and gave to employees.
Now, is this something you've objected to in the past? Or?
Absolutely. I've absolutely objected. That's why I believe I was fired. I believe because all the clients like me. Commander McClanahan says that the Army runs the best when I'm there. There's never a problem. I don't have to have police up there. Numerous nights, the other manager, Sugar, has had to have police up there almost every night. She pounds on the wall with her fists and screams how she's going to pound people's face in. People are very upset. They're very scared of her. That's why they no longer put in complaints to the office for Sugar, because they come in, they put in the complaints, and then they're told, oh, well, they're just people that don't like Sugar, and those complaints don't mean anything.
Are there a lot of complaints against staff of people running the armory, let's say, people like Sugar?
Complaints, you say that again?
Have there been a lot of complaints against policies at the armory or things happening up there?
Yes, against Sugar Ship. Not a lot of written complaints, because like I said, when they make written complaints, they now get retaliated against by Sugar, and so they get put out, you know, 4 or 5 nights out in the cold or longer. Sugar very much. If you upset Sugar, or if you have a slight, they call it, what their favorite term is wingnut. Okay? Anybody who acts a little bit strange is a wingnut. And if you act strange, you're put out of the armory for up to 30 days or more. Okay?
Is there a specific policy? I mean, can you appeal that kind of decision, or is there a process, a grievance process?
No, there isn't. If the manager or the monitor says they're out, it's given to Jeremy and it's automatic. And Sugar says you're out, period. You go into the office and they say, well, that's too bad.
Presumably you can appeal to Karen Gillette?
Yes. You supposedly can appeal, but other than one very sick person, I've seen no appeals.
What was her response in that case?
Generally, it's that, like I said, a number of people told me, they were flat out told, well, you just don't like Sugar and you're just complaining because you don't like her, that it's not true.
And you heard this from the people or from Karen? Or?
From the clients themselves.
How are accommodations at the armory? Have you been finding them crowded in the last month?
Not exceptionally, no. Our biggest night was a little over 100. But generally, it's running about 70. But we don't have a lot of rain yet. So a large percentage of the homeless have not come down out of the mountains yet. They come down out of the mountains and you'll run over 100 a night, easily.
And what about the cold snap? Has that brought a lot of people in?
A fair amount. We also know that we run 2 men's church groups and 2 women's church groups. So there's, 90 or so people that are going out to churches that aren't coming to. So we're taking the overflow.
Now what about, I've heard concerns about the fact that the people who use the armory, there isn't much food in the morning. There's like oatmeal, coffee, and donuts, and long lines, and so forth. What's your impression of that?
Actually, that's very true, but it's not at the armory. Okay, know that there's no food service from the armory whatsoever. There's no dinner, there's no breakfast. They get them up at 5 in the morning, and they load them on buses, and they bring them back down to the Human Resource Center. They're on Coral Street, and there's a breakfast there at 8 o'clock in the morning that is, as I say, a little cup of oatmeal and maybe coffee, decaffeinated coffee, because they refuse to serve caffeinated coffee because they say they don't want people over there winging around on caffeine.
I see.
Yeah.
What kind of improvements would you like to see at the Homeless Services Center?
Number one, more compassion for the people. I think it should be people who care about people that work there. People that do not allow personal grudges or personal opinions of people to color how they deal with them. There can't be these people that continually say, well, they're just a wingnut, they're just crazy. Well, crazy people have rights too. And even if they're a wingnut, they deserve to be out of the cold. If you speak to them with compassion and a little bit of kindness out of your heart, you have no problem. Because I take these people, when I was manager, I had all these people that they're claiming are such a problem and calling the police about and, and kicking out and all this, all went with me, and I never had a problem. I'd go, if there's still something started, I'd go, I'd sit and talk to the person for a minute, and boom, no problem.
We used to hear in years past, not that it matters much to me, that there was a lot of staff drug use at the homeless services center. Not that I care, because I think drugs should be decriminalized, and I feel that the use of particularly something like marijuana is nobody's business. But there was a sense, again, of some sort of insider favoritism, some side, small group of people using positions of privilege to, I don't know, clear other people out, saying they couldn't sell cigarettes there, but this favored group inside could. Is there any kind of problem of that sort this year at the homeless services center?
On the drug issue, no, there's not a problem. Yes, a large portion of the employees are ex-drug people, and I'm sure there's some amount of drug use, and like you say, I agree, marijuana should be decriminalized. I got no problem with anybody who uses marijuana. You ain't never seen nobody on marijuana kill somebody, so come on, let's get serious here. But drug issue is not the issue of favoritism and buddyism, absolutely. Absolutely, that's how you get hired and fired there. You know, if you don't go along with the program and you're not the little clique's buddies, which is my problem. I stepped outside of the family, okay? At one point, this girl, Sugar, claimed to be my sister. I mean, I'd done so much for her, and I was, you know, I treated her like sand, and I still do, okay? She's still my sister. I don't give up on people. Your love for life, hate or madness goes away, okay? You may get mad at someone, and you tell them, Mom, I'm a little mad at you, or tell them what you dislike about what they did, but you don't stop loving them, okay? So what's wrong with the world? Not enough love, okay? We all need to care a little more about each other. That's what I don't see at the shelter. I don't see people who care about other people. And I see people that are buddies of others, no matter how many applications they are. Somebody will walk in who's been gone, been fired before, whatever, and they'll come in, a little cronyism, and boom, they're working and they have a job there.
Now, what about Karen Gillette's managership? Do you have any sense that she's a good manager, a fair manager, poor manager? How would you, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate her?
5. Sorry, but it's true, Karen, if you're listening. The fact is I rate you a 5. I feel that you are a fairly good manager, and I think you could do a much better job than you're doing. I feel that you're fairly non-committal about the shelter. You know, you're going to let it ride, okay? She wants everything else to be handled, and don't bring any problems to her, okay? She doesn't want to deal with it, okay? I really get the feeling that that's what it is, that it's like she's gotten where she is, and now she's going to coast, okay? I think she needs to fight more. I think I'd love to hear her come out against the camping ban, which I've been told she supports. Okay?
Did she tell
I don't
you
know that,
that
for a fact. Please understand, this is just something I've heard, some statements I've seen before, you know. But the way I understand it, she supports the sleeping ban.
Wow. We've been talking to James Day. James, anything you want to add before you finish up?
Yeah, there is one little thing. You mind if I make a plea to the folks? What I'd like is, number one, could you donate blankets? Like I said, supposedly $500 was spent in blankets, and ain't none made it to the armory. People are sleeping up there without blankets, you know, or actually, there's some of the blankets are so thin, they need 2 or 3 blankets. It's cold, okay? If you would come in, donate blankets, and say they are for the armory. Make it a point to say they're for the armory, because if you don't, then the Human Resource Center takes them, and we don't see nothing up there. Okay, and then the other thing is the homeless could sure use socks. So anybody who's willing to donate socks, please, warm feet, no sickness. People keep their feet warm, they don't get as sick.
Now that's a complaint about the armory and why some people say they don't use it, because they say with so many people in so small a space, coughing and so forth, that diseases are more easily transmitted. What's your experience on that?
Yeah, I have to say that's the truth. I'm sorry, but it's a fact of life, you know. Yes. It's one person starts coughing, it can tend to be passed. Everybody's so close, you know, communal sleeping facilities and that. That's something, but it's better than being out in the cold. Okay?
Fair enough. Anything more you want to say?
No, just Merry Christmas to everybody, and let's all try to be a little nicer to each other. It all starts at home.
Talking to James Nay, previously director, or what was your position?
Manager.
Manager of the Winter Armory Shelter, until fired by Human Services Director Karen Gillette.
Yeah, well, so I guess she's also director. It's called ISSP, Interfaith Satellite Shelter Project.
That's a part of the
HCRC,
the
Human Resource Center.
Human Services Center.
That's it.
Yeah.
HCRC.
I can never
knew.
What,
never knew what HCRC stood for, to be honest.
That was.
And that was James Nay, who we've actually had on the show talking about issues at the Armory and at the Homeless Services Center. James, I think, is out of town, though perhaps he's back. If he is back, I'd love to hear from him. He
an articulate speaker, and more to the point, in my book, he puts himself out there on the civil rights front. He brought lots of folks to the Don't Sleep Tonight night on December 28th, when we had our My Car Is My Home, Leave Me Alone protest. Speaking of protesters, though, or though actually people protested against, we have on the phone, just calling in, that man about Santa Cruz, lurking here and there with a digital camera and open eyes. Shaw's the fidget man. Let's go to the phone and see if we can actually have a working phone line. Wouldn't that be nice?
Hello there. You're on the line with Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good evening, Robert. Good evening, Santa Cruz.
Good evening. Good evening.
I'm calling in today to kind of give a little update on what's been going on for me as I attempt to deal with my emerging case and my very factually based circumstances. I had a very interesting experience yesterday. I was thrown out of the Santa Cruz Mercury News Santa Cruz office.
Not that's down on Pacific Avenue.
Yeah. The Mr. Kornstrom, I guess his name is.
We're talking about Lee Kornstrom. He's the columnist who writes in the Monday and Thursday second section. You find him in the Mercury News, and he's the only individual who has ever called me King of the Bums in a repeated printed medium. So I must tip off my hat to him. I call him the Baron of the Bigots.
Wow, yeah, that's a little controversy I don't know that I'd get in the middle of, except for to say that, sticks and stones may break my bones, right? There you go. What happened after my assault, which I guess most people are familiar with...
Well, let me summarize briefly. You apparently had an encounter with the Seaside Goon Squads, or they would call them security folks, about a year ago in an essentially innocent inquiry about a sign they had posted regarding if you leave your bike here... We have unless you leave the property, when we tell you to, we can confiscate your bike or skateboard for 30 days, and you asked about that. They misunderstood and ended up assaulting you and dragging you off to jail on charges that disappeared. Is that accurate?
Yeah, kind of, a couple little warbles here and there. I mean, for instance, the sign, it doesn't say anything about what you're doing with these vehicles is illegal. It just says verbatim, no bikes, skateboards, or rollerblades permitted, period.
And then, of course, there's confusion about where the property line ends. They apparently did this on public property that was not even Seaside Company property. And I know that the Seaside Company is an eager, expanding corporation, but what with Kennedy gone and the Kennedy proxies defeated on the city council, their expansion plans have, shall we say, temporarily been halted. And goodness gracious, it may mean that they have to respect what are public spaces and what are private spaces.
Yeah, let me tie this into Lee, because this is the interesting thing. See, 3 days after they assaulted me and charged me with trespassing, I was down there researching their title deed at the Hall of Records to find out what was and wasn't their property. Because the corpus delicti of trespassing, of course, is you have to be on their property.
You were checking out how far the Seaside property extends.
Well, I wanted their deed. I wanted to know what they owned, period.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of doing that, I found out that when during a major sidewalk renovation in 1993 at the Seaside Company, or down in that area, they had a choice of either pitching in for the sidewalk renovation or relinquishing some property to the city. And they chose the latter of the options, which of course would decrease their taxes because they own less property, and also help the city, because then the city has, gets that property. So what they did was they deeded 2,395, give or take a few feet, to the city of Santa Cruz in exchange for sidewalk improvements. And this land is located directly in front of the casino entrance door, and I have their guards on tape saying, you cannot go from the edge of the building anywhere down on that side of the tracks. A blatant lie, although they didn't know they were lying, because that's what their boss told them. And
they were misinforming the public.
Exactly. When I discovered this 3 days after I got the ticket, I went into the San Jose Mercury News armed with the title deed to show them that what had happened was wrong. And while I was in there, one of the assistants was taking an interest in what I was showing, and then
John
Lee
Wolfolk,
interrupted me and told me to get out of the office, and I probably was trespassing.
Now, hang on. Are you talking about John Wolfolk, the assistant? Actually, he's a co-writer, I believe.
I'm not sure it was
a year
and a half ago, and I...
Yeah, there are two people in that office. One of them is John Wolfolk. The other is the infamous and too long-lived Lee Kornstrom. Not that he should be dead, but I would say that he should have retired from journalism years ago. He's a major dinosaur and a rather embarrassing one.
Well, and boy, is this embarrassing, because, you know, had he looked at what I had and then said, we're not interested, get out, that would be one thing. But to threaten to call the police on me, I don't know what kind of fight he's trying to pick, but the reality is he now has a nemesis where before he had nobody, I had no opinion about him aside from the fact that he's somebody doing something. So I waited a year and a half after they threatened to call the police on me that day for showing them factual paper. And I went in there yesterday, and I went armed with my big fidget. I make these fidgets. I had a huge one, and I went with a whole
package. Now, hold it. For those who don't know, a fidget is a sort of a bicycle gear chain device that you sort of a miniaturized thing. You use it with your hands to, shall we say, fidget your troubles away.
Indeed. Increased dexterity and eye-hand coordination, and just basically gives something you can be in control of when other stuff outside of your control is going on.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Lee Kornstrom.
Yeah, I have an extensive amount of compiled information at this point about this case and the circumstances around it, and none of this is anything that's really debatable. It's all black and white. It's on paper. You know, several things happened. The day after the assault, I had countercharged them for assault and battery. My charges didn't get written up by the Santa Cruz Police Department for 60 days later, and when they were written up, they omitted the four witnesses, and they minimized my injuries. So, say, I had an abrasion to my knee because they pulled me down by my arm and drugged me on my knee enough to rip a hole through my jeans and take skin off of my knee. And then in the report it says I complained of a scratch to my left knee. You know, a scratch is something you do with a safety pin. You
know, all of this was on public property, right?
Exactly. It was on public property.
Which they claimed was private Seaside Company property.
Exactly. If it had been on private property, it was an undue use of force.
Mm-hmm.
And the witnesses will certainly confirm that when we get to court.
Because you are, in fact, suing them in a civil suit using our favorite attorney, Catnip Kate Wells?
Yeah, she's been with me since 2 days after the assault. When I went in and told her what happened, she showed up at the arraignment, of which there was no arraignment. Now, my big question here, and this is my question to Santa Cruz and really in general, what is due process? I don't believe that I received due process because I was given this ticket and this trespass warning. By the way, there were 5 date locations on the ticket and the warning, and they were all filled out 1970.
They got their heads in the past, I think.
Yeah, that's why I wondered if he was stuck in the past. So now I got these 2 paper documents. I fulfilled my part of it and went to the arraignment. You know what? There was no record there. So I went to go try to get a record of the case against me. I didn't receive one iota of paper, and I tried literally dozens of times in between when it happened and when I got the paper. It took me 6 months to get anything. And in the meantime, my life has fallen apart, and they basically destroyed my business because this whole thing happened after 6 years of business development by me and 6 months in partnership with someone. And in that 6 months, we were booking shows. So 3 days after this assault, I had my first juried art show after 6 years of development. Yeah, right now it's a simple little local issue in Santa Cruz, aside from the fact that I was a guest on Art Bell. But it's about to bust out national because I have all these self-addressed envelopes from all over the country. And it just frightens me that nobody has the chutzpah to say, we're sorry. You know, that's all I've been looking for this whole time, somebody to own up to
sure.
a mistake.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The same thing happened to the man who was beaten to a pulp by Deputy Liberty up in Scotts Valley on videotape. All he wanted was an apology from Art Danner and the Sheriff's Department. And in not getting it, he took it to court, and he got, I guess, $500,000 finally. And the DA wouldn't even look, this is our now new judge, Art Danner, wouldn't even look at the videotape of the man being beaten by Deputy Liberty on videotape, mind you. So it's incredible how well protected the forces of, one doesn't want to use words like fascist.
I would say capitalism.
But, well, certainly the police, you have a form of police state when police operate in an insulated environment that is not vulnerable, you know, that is not subject to checks by civilian authorities in any meaningful way. And I certainly hope your case is an exception to this, and I think we'll be continuing to monitor it because it's really important. What's your next date in court? What's next on this agenda?
Well, right now we're in what's called discovery. That means my lawsuit's been filed and the defendants have been subpoenaed. I am plaintiff. They are defendant. And now I get to ask them questions. And I'm just kind of debating on how I'm going to do this, whether I want to turn it into a national boondoggle before we even have our first court date, or whether I want to wait and be patient and wait till later. What they don't understand is I'm holding letters from national television programs and national media that want to find out about this, because when I went on Art Bell as a guest, in between the time that they charged me and their charges were dropped, I popped up into the public light after 6 years of lower level running around. And one thing I wanted to say, too, Robert, was I went to go see Chief Belcher just before I filed my complaint with the Citizens Police Review Board, which is now filed, about Chief Belcher's action and Deputy Chief Larson's action and Aaron Tripp's action in omitting the witnesses on my case. Before I went and filed that complaint, I went and I called the chief, and I said I'd like to talk to the chief, and I was told on the phone, well, the chief and the deputy won't talk to you. Now, they didn't know I was right outside the phone at record, so I walked in right in the door there, and I said, hi, I was just told that the chief wouldn't speak to me on the phone. Can I have that in writing? Now, of course, they don't want to back up what they say in writing, so the chief came out and basically told me, well, you know, everything has to be in writing. So now I've got my complaint filed, and we'll see how it works out. I just wish that Santa Cruz could, you know, find a way to, you know, make it comfortable for people to exist without just persecution, you know. That's what I feel like. I've been persecuted for 2 years, and I want to get over that.
Well, at least you got through to Chief Belcher, right? We rarely are able to have any communications of that kind, although he hasn't been on the Sybil to me, just hasn't been terribly accessible. Although, who knows, maybe a new police chief is in the cards. Wouldn't that be interesting? Although, one wonders with the current city council how far... how far we need to go and how far we are have yet to go.
Stay tuned at this next city council meeting. I'll be putting out some of my information there to the council, giving them paper copies of all of this. And if it was just like a simple matter where, you know, maybe I didn't get to court or whatever, or there was some kind of mistake, that's one thing. But to spend 6 months of my life, and then I found out that my charges, my supplemental charges, or my charges for assault and battery with four witnesses, were added onto the case against me as a supplemental narrative. So when the DA no-filed the case against me, without all the facts and the witnesses, also the case against them, my charges against them, were also no-filed. And you know what? They waited 60 days to type up the supplement after I filed the charges.
Sounds like bad behavior on the part of the police department, the district attorney's office, and the Seaside Company. I understand you've actually tried to have some sort of mediation with the Seaside Company, talking to Fuhrer himself, Charlie Canfield.
I've spoken to Mr. Canfield on the phone twice, and he seemed amicable towards getting this dealt with, but then he passed me off to these insurance people, and they do not understand what it's like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll be off in just a second. So I got to get off the phone here because somebody needs the phone.
I guess the last thing that I remember you telling me before was that... Whoops. Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah. Was that the... you're going into discovery with the Seaside Company, which means you get to ask them questions about what went on there, and you are not just going to do this on the basis of an attorney's advice, but you're thinking of actually inviting the public nationwide to call in with their questions to Charlie Canfield?
Yeah, you know, that's one of the mickeys that they may get slipped in this matter. See, I'm holding over 1,000 self-addressed stamped envelopes from the entire country, all of the 50 states. There is no state that is not represented. So my intention is to send out to them all in their self-addressed stamped envelopes all of the material facts of this case and let them help me to come up with the questions to ask them. And then we'll see what's going to happen with this, because the reality is it's gone on far too long. It's just ridiculous. On the face of it, it's patently, blatantly illegal, sick, and wrong. If this happened to Mr. Kornstrom or whatever his name is, he'd be screaming bloody murder in his column every day for months. But the reality is it didn't happen to him, so he feels insulated. Well, wait until he doesn't have his blinker on, and then he goes around the corner and the cops pull him out of his car and they abuse him, and we'll see how he feels then.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that what's even more significant is that Kornstrom has helped to snuff and stop an important story, probably because perhaps he didn't like your appearance, or maybe he's a friend of Charlie Canfield's, or who knows
I called his boss. I gave her the filing number. I called his boss over the hill, and I said, look, you know, this is ridiculous. It would have been one thing if he had looked at my information and said we weren't interested, but to threaten to call the police on me, I mean, excuse me, you're supposed to be the media, an objective third party. It's not like I'm stupid here. I understand his job pretty well, and I'm just disappointed that it worked out like that.
Well, thank you, Shaz. Is there more you want to add in any way we can help you?
I kind of got to clear the line for the next person that wants the phone here, but what I can say is that Free Radio Santa Cruz here, serving the Santa Cruz community, is someplace where stuff like this and stuff like whatever the difficulty is can come out over the air. You know, I'm not a member of the Free Radio Collective, but I do support the endeavors that Free Radio has to bring free speech to the public, because we are the public. We are the highest office holders in the land. We're the citizens. And somehow somebody got confused and thought that they were the highest office holders in the land. And because I had an electrical malfunction, they're going to tax me $160. One last thing I wanted to add. I went to court recently on a bicycling on the sidewalk ticket. When I was in court, I said to the judge at one point, well, it doesn't matter what I told him. It was selective enforcement. But I said, it doesn't matter whether I pay. If I pay the fine, it's just going to go to pay the policeman's overtime. And that's the truth. And he said, well, that's a slanderous, outrageous kind. And I said, yeah, and I stand behind it. You know, further, this is all revenue enhancement. And here's what I mean. If a cop writes me a ticket, and it's a bad ticket, if I want to go the easy route, I just pay the ticket, and then I don't have to deal with any trouble. If it's a bad ticket and I go to court, the policeman is, in essence, rewarded for writing a bad ticket by getting overtime pay while we're in court. That seems to me blatantly wrong. You know, so basically, you can make up a charge. You either pay the extortion, in which case it's like, ha, 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 I taxed you, you know, and he gets to smile and smirk, or he gets paid a bonus for me fighting the ticket. Whether I win or lose, the city's paying him. That's something wrong with that system.
Surely not in Santa Cruz, Shaws.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you know what? The officer who wrote the ticket didn't even show up. It was his partner. I never even got to face the accusing party. He was on vacation.
Well,
the judge wouldn't throw out the ticket. He said, well, no, we have another officer here who witnessed the event.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, please.
But he didn't write the ticket, so I don't think he has the right to prosecute it. And since there was no prosecutor and no prosecution, the case should have been thrown out.
Yeah, let Mr. McAdams know that.
Okay.
He couldn't even make a decision during the case. He said, well, I'll have to go look where you were bicycling, and I'm supposed to hear by mail. I haven't heard anything yet. It's been a couple of weeks. They embarrass themselves with their bureaucracy and their idiocy. You know, what I'm holding here is material facts and proof, and what they have is all innuendo and just complete BS, and somehow they're able to control us all.
No, they have the power. That's the problem. We've got to retrieve the power, and I want to thank you, Shaz.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes in 90 days, see who's got the power there, huh?
All right.
Take
care
now.
Keep us advised.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yep. In reality, of course, all of us have the power, but we're so busy struggling in their factories and their treadmills and in their legal system that we forget it. But we've got to remember it, and do remember it, and call in and talk about it. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz and Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm your host, Robert Norris. The phone number to call in is 427-3772. The lines are open, 427-3772. We're going to be proceeding with the show for the next hour and a half until 8, when Uncle Dennis will come on with Earth First, and lots of important information there. Have your notebooks ready at 8. Until then, let's skip to the phones, and if you can't get yourself to dial me because you feel that perhaps you've got nothing to say or don't want to talk on the air, give a call to the Santa Cruz City Council at 429-3550 and then press the pound key and tell them to end the sleeping ban. That's the law that makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep after 11 o'clock at night in a vehicle or out of doors. Still on the books, still being enforced, still used to harass and move people around. It's now the subject of a discussion by the City Council, a very lengthy discussion that should go on until February, if not longer, during which time homeless people will continue to be harassed, ticketed, arrested, and moved along under the law because the mayor and her majority on the city council can't seem to get it together to realize that for homeless people to be able to be a part of this discussion, they have to be able to sleep, and you want elementary justice to be happening during the period when you're fine-tuning the machine. You want to let them know that it's time to end the sleeping ban so that homeless people can sleep during this period, and if not, you know, continuing on down the road, but certainly in the next couple months when they're trying to be a part of this discussion, 429-3550, 429-3550, and then push the pound key. That'll put you into the voicemail for the Santa Cruz City Council, and then tell them to end the sleeping ban, put that on the agenda for January 12th, that's the Tuesday coming up, and end it there so that we can discuss the larger issues of the camping ban, of which the sleeping ban is only a small part. And that involves larger issues of how can you set up areas where people can camp on a more, possibly a more permanent basis, certainly on a more protected basis, where you can actually have a tent, maybe cook some food, do all the things that people should be entitled to do if they're willing to provide those resources themselves, or possibly even if they can't. 429-3550, press the pound key, say end the sleeping ban so we can get on with the business the bigger business of healing this community and moving forward into the 21st century. And give me a call at 427-3772.
Talking to those two big-time criminals,
Ash and...
Sunshine.
Ash and Sunshine. And it's about 5 to 6 on January 6th. We're down in front of Togo's, and I'm looking at some tickets here, Ash, for both of you got. I guess they ticket you in pairs, kind of like
yeah.
Can't ticket one without the other, you know.
Correct.
And both of these things happened today. One was around 4:20, and it had to do with sitting within 50 feet of a change machine, but it says panhandling within 50 feet of a change machine. And how many police officers did this? Well, tell us what happened.
We were kicking in, they went, they passed by us, then they walked up behind the car and sat there, and then, you know, we were just kicking in, and I asked somebody a question about, you know, how we do our change thing. And they're like, they come around, we heard you, blah, blah, blah.
And what were you, what was the nature of the conversation here with the, were you doing the making love, making
yeah.
pennies thing?
And they're like, they just said we were panhandling for that, and that's not really panhandling, you know?
They sat there waiting for us to say something, you know?
Yeah.
I see. They were trying to gather evidence of a crime, eh?
Yeah.
It is true that if you sit...
We didn't know that, though.
...anywhere, actually sitting down anywhere
right.
and asking for anything of value is considered criminal behavior any time of the day or night.
We don't ask for anything of value. It's just more likely anything we'll throw out, a cigarette butt, a nail, a penny, it don't matter. You know, just...
It's okay to have a sign. It's okay to do what you're doing, as far as I'm concerned. But
yeah.
the law in this town is very rigid and very vicious. It's called the downtown ordinance. We're trying to change it. It says if you sit within 50 feet of an ATM, if you ask for change within 50 feet of an ATM, if you...
Yeah, but they're a cop just for going past a yellow light.
Taco Bell?
Yeah, we were sitting at Taco Bell, and he comes in while we're eating. Yo, he sits outside for 5 minutes, and we're all trying to wonder who he's, like, going to talk to. He comes in and talks to us while we're eating, asking us for IDs, and keeps us in the restaurant while we're eating, gives us tickets right there for everybody.
You can't just harass him.
Remember the name of the cop?
No, he didn't give us...
It looks like the cop who did the panhandling ticket was badge 445, and the one who did the Taco Bell was badge 138. And both of these tickets happened today. One was at 2 o'clock, and one was at 4:20. Looks like harassment to me, guys.
Yeah, it does.
Any comments on this?
Yeah, I think it's wrong because, you know, it's freedom of speech. A person can say whatever they want to a person, you know, as long as it's within reasonable, you know, words. I mean, I understand cussing a person out is wrong, but, you know, to be polite towards a person and just ask them a simple question is wrong. It's freedom of speech.
You know, I think it might be appropriate to file complaints about these tickets. You can do that tomorrow morning. Today is Wednesday. At the Citizens Police Review Board, if you want, I can give you their address if you want to go to file a complaint.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I'll do that.
And that, of course, was an interview last night with a couple that was harassed by the police, first for crossing the street on the yellow light, and then for sitting down with pennies, forming the phrase, making love, and asking passerbys if they wanted to help them make love on the sidewalk. They face, I guess, $262 tickets each for that kind of pretty serious criminal behavior. But on the line, we have another longtime criminal. In fact, one of our talk show hosts, the infamous Merlin. Hi, Merlin.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm just sitting here getting a little